Chapter 23. The Palace of My Ancestors. False Brothers Baffled. The town we came to, a magnificent palace, also most strangely familiar and yet unfamiliar to my eyes. In wandering through this city I was so reminded of its earthly double that I felt as one who sees some familiar beloved spot in a nightmare vision which has distorted and rendered hideous all that he deemed so fair. In my youth gazed up at this beautiful palace and taken pride to myself that I came of the race who had once owned it and all its broad lands, and now, here, to behold it thus, with all its beauties tarnished, its marble stained and mildewed, its terraces and statues broken and defaced, its fair front marred with the black cobwebs of past crimes and wrongs done within its walls, and its lovely gardens a dreary blackened waste as though the breath of a pestilence had swept over it, sent through me a thrill of sorrow and dismay, and it was with a saddened heart I followed my friend into the interior. Broad stairways we passed, and through the handsome doors which opened of themselves to admit us, many dark spirits flitting to and fro, each and all seemed to expect and welcome us as guests whose coming was awaited. At the last door faithful friend once again left me, saying he would rejoin me in another place. Ruddy light greeted my eyes as this last door opened, and seemed as though someone had opened the door of a furnace, so hot and stifling was the atmosphere. By degrees the blaze of light died down to a dull red glow, and a wave of steel-gray mist swept through the hall instead, while a wind as of ice froze the blood of my heart and seemed to impart its icy chill. Waves of heat and cold were caused by the intense fire of passion and the cold selfish chill of the dual nature of the man who reigned here as prince. To the most fierce insatiable passions he united an intense selfishness and an intellect of the highest order. His earthly life, causing strange alternations of fiery passion and cool calculation in his conduct, so did these as waves thrown off by his spirit cause in this his spiritual mansion these extraordinary variations of intense heat and extreme cold that knew no medium of temperature between. Who came within the range of his power, so did he dominate the spiritual beings around him now, and rule as absolutely over them as he had ruled over his earthly subjects. At the top of this great hall I beheld him seated in his chair of state which had around it all but imperial insignia. His walls were hung with the semblance of ancient tapestry, but, ah, how more than merely faded and ragged it looked. It was as though the thoughts and the life and the magnetism of the man had become woven into those ghostly hangings and had corrupted them with his own corruption. Instead of pictures of the chase, of floating nymphs, and crowned sea gods, there was a constantly shifting panorama of this man's past life in all its hideousness and nakedness, thrown like pictures from a magic lantern upon the stately mouldering ragged arras drapery behind and around him. Those, through which the light of day never shone, were hung with the semblance of what had on earth been handsome velvet curtains, but which now appeared as some funeral pall shrouding the skeleton shapes that lurked like avenging spectres within them, spectral forms of those victims whom this man had sacrificed to his lust and ambition, great drinking cups of silver, that seemed of a white heat when you touched them, and huge costly vases adorned the tables, and here as elsewhere there was the same hideous phantom of a feast, the same bitter mockery of earthly pleasure. At my entrance the lord of this horrid place rose from his throne to greet me with welcoming words, and I recognized with a thrill of horror that he was the spiritual counterpart of that ancestor of my family from whom we had all been so proud to think we were descended, and whose portraits I had often been told I much resembled. The same man, the same haughty handsome features, without doubt. But, ah, subtle, how awful was the change upon them, the brand of shame and dishonor stamped on every line, the corruption showing through the mask with which he still strove to cover it. Here in hell all men are seen as they are, and no power can avail to hide one atom of their vileness, and this man was vile indeed. In sensuality he had been distinguished for his sins, and in an age when men thought but little of cruelty he had shown as one without pity or remorse. Overwhelmed to think that there could have been points of resemblance of any sort between us, simply because he had in his day wielded almost regal power, and this man spoke to me now as one in whom he had an interest, since I was of his race and me here, and would that I should dwell with him. This link that earthly relationship gave, he had attached himself to my earth life and had from time to time been able to influence it. When I had felt most of ambition and a proud desire to rise and be again one with the great ones of earth, as had been my ancestors in the past, then had he been drawn up to me and had fed and fostered my pride and my haughty spirit, that was in a sense akin to his own, who had prompted those acts of my life of which I felt now the most ashamed, acts that I would have given all my life to undo, after I had done them. Use me in the world till I should be able to grasp power of some kind and reign a king in the field of intellect, if I could not reign king of a country as he had done. Hoped himself again to wield power over men, which should be some compensation for his banishment to this place of darkness and decay. Cried, "'Tis a charnel house of mouldering bones and dead skeletons, but now you are come to join me, we shall see if we cannot, combined, do something to make ourselves feared, if not obeyed, by the dwellers of the earth, son of our noble race. And I feared you would escape me at last, bore you down, but was ever baffled by some unseen power. And again, when I deemed I had beyond doubt made all things sure, you would shake me off and break away from all control, till I had well nigh abandoned the struggle. Anyone, and when I could not be with you myself, I sent some of my henchmen to do service. Ho, ho, service, yes, service. And so here you are at last, and by my faith you shall not again leave me. There are the pleasures I have prepared for you." And his seemed as though burning with more than the fire of fever, and led me to a seat beside himself to sit down and see this adventure out, but prayed in my heart to be kept safe from temptation. "Offer me wine or food," his instinct and knowledge told him I should only despise them, but he caused a most lovely strain of music to sound in my ears that had so long been deprived of the solace of that heavenly art which ever appealed most strongly to my senses. She sought to lure her victims, swelled, died away, and rose again. Of the earth could have been at once so beautiful and so horrible, could at the same time intoxicate and inflame the brain and heart, and yet fill my soul with so intense a feeling of fear and repugnance. Rose a great black mirror in which I saw reflected the earth and its life, and myself swaying the minds and the thoughts of thousands through the fevered fascinations of such music which I could make mine, and through its spell waken the lowest yet the most refined of passions, till those who heard should lose themselves and their souls under its potent witchery. Showed me armies and nations dominated to ambitious ends by himself and his influence, so that he should reign again as a despot through the organism of an earthly tyrant. Here, too, he said, I should share his power. Again, I saw the power in intellect and in literature which I could control and influence through the imaginative descriptive faculties of mortals who, under my prompting, would write such books as appealed to the reason, the intellect, and the sensual passions of mankind, until the false glamour thrown over them should cause men to view with indulgence and even approval the most revolting ideas and the most abominable teachings. He showed me picture after picture, illustrating how man on earth could be used by spirits, who possessed sufficient will, power and knowledge, as mere tools through which to satisfy their lust for power and sensual enjoyments of every sort. Much of this I had known before, but had never fully realized the vast extent of the mischief possible to such a being as the one before me, were it not for the checks imposed upon him by those higher powers whose wills are as strong as his. Them he only knows as an unseen force opposed to him, which baffles his efforts at every turn, unless he can find in man a medium of so congenial a nature that they can truly work together as one, and devastation follow in their train. And then do we see such monsters of triumphant wickedness as have disgraced the annals of all times. In heaven, these are growing fewer and further between, as the human race and the spirit spheres become purified through the teachings of the angels of the celestial spheres. Last of all there appeared before us a woman's form, of such surpassing loveliness, such seductive charm, that for one instant I arose to look more closely at her and see if she could be real. And at that moment there came between me and the black magic mirror the mist-like form of an angel with the face of my beloved. Her this woman seemed so coarse and material and revolting to me that the momentary illusion of the senses was gone, and I knew her for what she was, What all her kind are in truth sirens that betray and ruin and drag men's souls to hell while they themselves are all but soulless. This revulsion of feeling in myself caused the waves of magnetic ether on which the music and these images were borne to us, to waver and break and vanish, leaving me alone with my tempter once more, with his voice sounding in my ears, pointing out to me how all these delights might still be enjoyed by me if I would but join him and be his pupil. Deaf ears. His promises allured me not. In my heart was only a horror of all these things, only a wild longing to free myself from his presence or to go forth, but found I could not move one step. An invisible chain held me fast, and with a derisive laugh of rage and triumph, he called out to me ironically, "Go, since thou wilt have none of my favors or my promises. Both now and see what awaits you." Strange alarm creeping over me and a strange numbness of limbs and brain. A mist seemed to gather round and enfold me in its chill embrace, while phantom forms of awful shape and giant size drew near and yet more near. Oh, horror! They were my own past misdeeds, my own evil thoughts and desires, which had been prompted by this very man beside me and which nestling in my heart had formed those links between us that held me to him now. Cruel laugh broke from him at my discomfiture. Thought myself too good for his company, and wave on wave the grim phantoms crowded round us, growing each more black and fearful as they gathered, hemming me in on every side, while below our feet opened a great vault or pit in which I saw, or seemed to see, a seething mass of struggling human forms. Still shook in wild paroxysms of rage and fiendish laughter, and, pointing to the gathering phantoms, bid them hurl me into the black pit. But suddenly above me in the darkness gleamed a star, and from it fell a ray of light like a rope, which I grasped with both my hands, and as the folds of light diffused themselves around me I was drawn up, out of that dark place, away from that fearful palace. Astonishment, and relief, at my release, I found myself in the open country with faithful friend and no less a spirit than my eastern guide himself making passes over me. For I was much shaken and exhausted with the struggle. Kind and tender manner addressed me, and told me he had permitted this trial in order that my knowledge of the true nature of the man I had just left should be my best protection in future against his wiles and schemes for my enslavement. Who thought of this man with pride or respect as an ancestor and one who had any ties to you, so long would his power to influence you continue. But now your own sense of horror and repugnance will act as a repelling power to keep his influence away from you. Did you but know it, need no other protection. In the end senses to be beguiled and your will paralyzed by this dark being before you were aware, and thus, had I not rescued you, he might, though for a time only, have made you subject to him and, while you were so, have done you serious injury. Take heed now while you yet remain in his sphere, that you do not again lose the sovereignty over yourself, which is your own and which no man can usurp unless your wavering will allows him to do so. Follow still your pilgrimage, which will soon, however, draw to its close, and I bid you be of good cheer, since your reward shall come from her whom you love and who loves you and sends ever her most tender thoughts to you. He was gone as mysteriously as he had come. And faithful friend and I set out once more to see what experiences we would meet with further on. Importance of manner, and asked if we were not members of the Brotherhood of Hope, since, if so, they had a message for one of us from a dearly loved friend on earth and were sent by one of our guides to deliver it. Pleased, were sent from her, since they had not the appearance of most of the dark spirits around. Their robes shone with a peculiar blue-gray light that was almost like a mist clothing them, and I had some trouble to make out their faces. When I did so I could not help starting, and a feeling of distrust crept over me, for the flickering veil of grey-blue gauze that interposed between us became at times so thin that I could see a couple of most repulsive dark spirits under it. I raised my arm as a warning, so I addressed them with caution and asked what was their message. "In the name of the Prophet," began one, "we were to tell you that your love is very, very ill, and prays that you return to earth to see her without delay, lest her spirit shall have passed, ere you arrive, to realms where you cannot follow her." Their words gave me at first a great sense of fear. "How long it since you left her?" "Not 2 days," was the reply, "and we are to bring you at once. Your eastern guide is with her and has sent us specially." I knew they lied, for the Eastern guide had but just left and he had said no word of my beloved being ill. Temporized with them and said, "Give me the secret sign of our brotherhood, since, unless you do so, I am, of course, not able to go with you." Gauzy mist was fast fading from them and I could see their dark forms growing more and more distinct beneath. Did not, however, show them that I saw this, and as they did not answer at once, but were whispering to each other, I continued, "If you are sent by our guide you will surely give me the countersign of our order?" "Surely yes." Air of great frankness. "Good," said I, "go on, finish it, finish it." "Is there more you want?" Stood puzzled at something, whereupon he added, "Hope is eternal and truth is and truth is." "Ha hum, what, am I go?" "Inevitable," said the other only upon them both. "You are so clever, friends, no doubt you can now give me the symbol." "Symbol?" "Diavolo." "There was no symbol we were to give." "Was there?" "Must be the one to give it to you." They both raised their arms to make a grab at me. I saw one had a withered hand and knew at once to whom I was indebted for this little plot. As they rushed upon me I stepped back and made the sign of the sacred symbol of truth in all ages and all worlds, as though I had struck them and rendered them unconscious. He left them to ruminate at their leisure, and as we moved away what he thought they would do now had given them a shock, and for the moment stunned them. But they will be up after us again ere long with some fresh devilment they will have hatched. If you had gone with them they would have led you into the morass yonder and left you to wander about half choked, if they did you no more serious harm. You must ever remember that they have great power in their own sphere if once you give yourself up to their guidance in any sense. T4, the story of Bendo, plotters again baffled. Faithful friend now proposed to me that we should visit one more city in this strange land, in order that I might see the man whose fate might have been my own but for the constancy and love which has so helped and sustained me. Our earthly histories were in some respects different, but there were some points of resemblance both in that and in our dispositions which would make the sight of this man and the knowledge of his history useful to me, while at a future time I might be able to help him. He said, "Since this man passed from earth, and it is only lately that he has begun to wish to progress, I found him here on my former visit to this place and was able to assist him a little and finally to enroll him as one of our brotherhood, and I am now told that he is shortly to leave this sphere for a higher one." Rapid flight we found ourselves hovering over a wide lagoon upon whose dark bosom there floated a great city, its towers and palaces rising from the waters, and reflected in them as in a mirror of black marble veined with dark red lines that somehow made me feel they were streams of blood flowing through it. The same dark pall of cloud lighted by the patches of steel grey and fiery red floating vapour which I had noticed in the other city. That we must be about to enter the Venice of these lower spheres, and on my saying so to faithful friend he answered, "Yes, and you will here find many celebrated men whose names were written on the history of their times in letters of fire and blood." We now found ourselves in the town, and proceeded to pass through its principal canals and squares in order that I might see them. It is counterparts of all those beautiful places made familiar by the brush of the artist and the fame of those who have carved for themselves a niche in the temple of history. Flowed the canals, seeming like dark crimson streams of blood flowing from some vast shambles, washing and rippling up the marble steps of the palaces to leave there a thick foul stain, and pavements seemed to me to ooze and drip blood. It was thick with its red shade of the countless thousands who had met their deaths by assassination or more legalized forms of murder, and whose bodies had found sepulture beneath the dark waves. Hooded together and like caged wild beasts, the ferocity of the cruel tiger in their gleaming eyes and the vindictive malice of the chained human tyrant in every attitude of their crouching figures. It was needful to thus confine since they were more ferocious than savage animals. 40 nobles with their motley following of soldiers and seamen in slaves, merchants and priests, humble citizens and fishermen, men and women of all ranks and all times, passed to and fro, and nearly all were alike degraded and repulsive looking. And hands, phantom arms, rose through the stones of the pavements from the dungeons beneath, striving to draw these others down to share their own misery. Hunted look on many of their faces, and black care seemed to sit behind them continually. Far out in the water of the lagoon spectral galleys floated, filled with slaves chained to their oars, but amongst them there were no longer the helpless victims of political intrigue or private revenge. These beings were the spirits of those who had been the hard taskmasters, the skillful plotters who had consigned many to this living death sea. I could behold the great ships, and nearer at hand in the ruined harbour there were more spiritual counterparts of those piratical craft of the Adriatic, filled with the spirits of their piratical crews who had made plunder and rapine and war their delight, and who now spent their time battling with one another and making forays upon others like themselves. Looking gondolas floated upon the waterways of the city, filled with spirits bent upon following still the occupations and pleasures of their former lives. In short, in this Venice, as in the other cities I had seen, there existed a life akin to that of Earth, save that from this place all the good and pure and true, all the real patriots and unselfish citizens were gone, and only the evil left to prey upon each other and act as avenging spirits to their companions in crime. On the parapet of one of the smaller bridges we found a man, wearing the dress of the Brothers of Hope, a dark grey robe such as I had myself worn in the earlier stages of my wanderings. His arms were folded upon his breast and his face was so far concealed by the hood that we could not see his features, but I knew at once that this was the man we had come to see, and I likewise recognized his identity as that of a celebrated Venetian painter whom I had known in my youth, though not very intimately. We had not met again, and I was ignorant that he had passed from earth, till I saw him sitting thus upon the bridge in this city of hell, recalling as it did those days of my youth when I also was a student of art with all the fairest prospects in life, as it would seem, before us, and now to see him and to think what his life must have been to bring him to this pass. He did not see us, so faithful friend proposed that we should turn aside for a little, while he told me this spirit's history, and then we could approach together and speak to him. I shall call by his spirit name of Bendo, since his earthly life is better to be forgotten. Had risen rapidly into fame after I knew him, and had been fairly successful in selling his pictures. Italy is not now a rich country, and Bendo's most wealthy patrons were the English and Americans who came to visit Venice, and at the house of one of them Bendo met the woman who was to overshadow his whole life with her baneful influence. He was young, handsome, talented, highly educated, and of an ancient though poor family, and therefore naturally received by all the best society in Venice. A lady who belonged to the higher ranks of this social sphere that Bendo lost his heart, and dreamed in his youthful and romantic foolishness that she would be content to become the wife of a struggling artist with nothing but his brains and a growing reputation. The lady was scarce 20 when they first met. Very beautiful, perfect alike in face and form, and endowed with all the charms which can enslave the heart of man, and she encouraged Bendo in every way, so that, poor youth, he believed her love to be as sincere as his. At thirst of her nature for admiration and love she was cold, calculating, ambitious, and worldly, incapable of either understanding or returning such a love as she inspired in a nature like Bendo's, which knows love or hate only in extremes. She was flattered by his attentions, charmed by his passionate devotion, and proud of having made conquest of one so handsome and so gifted, but she had no idea of sacrificing anything for his sake, and even when she was most tender, most alluring to him, she was striving with all her arts to become the wife of a middle-aged Venetian nobleman, whose wealth and position she coveted even while she despised the man himself. The end of Bendo's dream came all too soon. Ventured to lay his heart and all his prospects at the feet of his inamorata, pouring into her ears all the love and devotion of his soul. Well, she received it all very coolly, told him not to be a fool, explained to him how impossible it was that she could do without money and position, and, in fine, dismissed him with a calm indifference to his sufferings which nearly drove him mad. Ed from Venice, went to Paris, and there plunged into all the dissipations of that gay capital, striving to bury the recollection of his unfortunate passion. Meet for some years, and then Bendo's faith took him back to Venice once more, cured, as he hoped, and prepared to despise himself for his folly. He became famous as a painter, and could almost command his own price for his pictures. And that the lady had duly married the Marquis and was reigning as a society beauty and a queen of fashion, surrounded by a crowd of admirers whom she did not always feel it necessary to introduce to her husband, Bendo had resolved to treat the lady with cool indifference should they meet. But this was not her intention. Slave, always so, no lover should dare to break her chain till she chose to dismiss him. She devoted herself once more to the subjugation of Bendo's heart, and, alas, that heart was only too ready to surrender when she told him, with every accent of feeling in her voice, how she regretted now the path she had chosen. Bendo became her unacknowledged lover, and for a time he lived in a state of intoxication of happiness. But only for a time. The lady tired of everyone after a little. She liked fresh conquests, new slaves to do her homage. She liked excitement, and Bendo with his jealousy, his eternal devotion, grew tiresome, his presence wearisome. Moreover, there was another admirer, young, rich, handsome also, and the Marchesa preferred him, and told Bendo so, gave him, in fact, his kinch for the second time. His passionate reproaches, his violent protestations, his vehement anger all annoyed the lady greatly. As she grew colder, more insolent towards him, he grew more excited. He threatened, he implored, he vowed he would shoot himself if she proved false to him, and finally after a violent scene they parted and Bendo went home. When he called next day he was told by the servant that the Marchesa declined to see him again. Sir, the bitter shame of being a second time trifled with and flung aside like an old glove, were too much for his passionate fiery nature, and he went back to his studio and blew out his brains. Awoke to consciousness, it was to all the horrors of finding himself a prisoner in his coffin, and the graving of that body should liberate the soul. Those loathsome particles of that corpse was not severed. Oh, the horror of such a fate! Hear of it and not shudder to think what the bitter weariness and discontent of life, and a reckless desire to be free of it at any cost, may plunge the soul into. If those on earth would be truly merciful to the suicide, they would cremate his body, not bury it, that the soul may, by the speedy dispersal of the particles, be the sooner freed from such a prison. Readily from the material tree which is nourishing it, a great shock has cast it forth, but it still remains attached, till the sustaining link shall wither away. It would lapse into unconsciousness and lose for a little the sense of his terrible position, and from these states of merciful oblivion he would awaken to find that little by little the earthly body was losing its hold upon the spirit and crumbling into dust. But while it did so, he had to suffer in all his nerves the pangs of this gradual dissolution, the sudden destruction of the earthly body. While it would have given his spirit a more violent, more painful shock, would at least have spared him the slow torture of this lingering decay. The body ceased to hold the spirit, and he rose from the grave but still hung over it, tied, though he was no longer imprisoned. Then the last link snapped and he was free to wander forth into the earth plane. And seeing and feeling were most feebly developed, then gradually they unfolded and he became conscious of his surroundings. With these powers came again the passions and desires of his earthly life, and also the knowledge of how he could yet gratify them. He sought oblivion for his sorrow and bitterness in the pleasures of the senses. He was ever present with him, torturing him with the past for revenge, for power to make her suffer as he had done. And the very intensity of his thoughts at last carried him to where she was. He found her as of old, surrounded by her little court of gay admirers. Same, still as heartless, still untroubled by his fate and indifferent to it. It maddened him to think of the sufferings he had brought upon himself for the love of this woman. At last all thoughts became merged in the one thought of how he could find means to drag her down from her position. How strip her of all those things which she prized more than love or honor or even the lives of those who might be called her victims. Step by step he saw her come down from her proud position, losing first wealth, then honor, stripped of every disguise she had worn, and known for what she was, a vile temptress who played with men's souls as one plays with dice, careless how many hearts she broke, how many lives she ruined. Careless alike of her husband's honor and her own fair fame, so long as she could hide her intrigues from the eyes of the world and rise a step higher in wealth and power upon the body of each new victim. And even in his darkness and misery, Bendo hugged himself and was comforted to think it was his hands that were dragging her down and tearing the mask from her beauty and worldliness. Wondered how it was that so many events all tended to one end. Her ruined, carefully laid schemes were thwarted, her most jealously guarded secrets found out and held up to the light of day. She began at last to tremble at what each day might bring forth. It was as though some unseen agency, whose toils she could not escape, was at work to crush her, and then she thought of Bando and his last threats that if she drove him to despair he would send himself to hell and drag her with him. She had thought he meant to murder her perhaps, and when she heard he had shot himself and was dead, she felt relieved and soon forgot him, save when some event would recall him to her mind for a moment. Thought, and she began to shudder with fear lest he should rise from his grave and haunt her, and all the time there stood Bendo's spirit beside her, whispering in her ears and telling her that this was his revenge come to him at last.